Yeah. So without more definition than that, let's do that for a moment. Just feel what you feel in this present moment of existence. She says it can be quite difficult, but it's good to try. Eyes can be open or closed. Just sit and tune in. And then to be more specific, or actually no more specific, she said, how do you feel right now at this very moment? So tuning in a little bit more. And now more specifically, how do you feel physically? How does your body feel? You could do a body scan if that's helpful, starting at the top of the head, just going through all the points of the body down to the feet at your own speed. You could come back up from the feet when you're ready to all the points of the body, including the arms and the legs, back to the top of the head. This kind of opens up awareness of the whole body if that's something that you don't automatically do. You could make another sweep if that's helpful from the top of the head, through the body, to the feet, to the toes. And just rest in the sensation of your body, feeling your body in this present moment of awareness. Notice in particular if you have a particular sense of well-being or if there is pain or discomfort in any part of the body. Just being aware of that within, you know, keeping the mind open to the entire sensation of the body as well as all of the other senses, while also being aware of anything specific, any pleasant or unpleasant feeling in the body. And now, without losing track of any of the awareness we've already opened, how do you feel emotionally? And I think this is where she's talking about it can be difficult because sometimes it is hard to actually know how we feel emotionally in the moment. So let's just patiently let that surface if there's any emotional feeling going on. And she says it can be a specific emotion. Or it can just be that you feel pleasant versus unpleasant emotionally. Maybe a little tight, maybe a little anxious, maybe not much. Or maybe you feel very relaxed and happy and joyous. Pleasant versus unpleasant, comfortable or not comfortable emotionally. While still being aware, if your eyes are open, of the visual field, being aware of sounds, being aware of tactile sensations within and outside of your body, on your skin, aware of your body and aware in the same field of how you feel emotionally. And we don't have to do anything about it. It doesn't require any action. It doesn't require any judgment. Just noticing. It's okay if we feel off or uncomfortable. So we'll rest with that for a moment, and then I'll end with her final instruction about this. Right now, just resting in, being aware or becoming aware of how we feel. Just letting it rise to the surface of our awareness. And she suggests that we cultivate a sense of open-hearted receptivity to whatever is arising in our experience without narrowing it down into good or bad. How we feel is just how we feel. So we want to feel it with a sense of open-hearted receptivity, acceptance. She says, this starts with just feeling, just noticing, pleasant or unpleasant, and letting it be okay. So we'll rest like that for another moment, with the okayness of however we're feeling. No need to change it. Just getting to know it. And now, though it's not in the original meditation to get our tonglen in, we'll just become aware of all the beings, human, animal, and otherwise, beings in all the realms who have feelings, who have emotional distress, perhaps at this moment of one kind or another, or feeling of not okayness, breathing in their not okayness, breathing in their emotional discomfort, their emotional reactivity, joining it with any that we may have, letting it dissolve and breathing out everything good, everything they need, breathing out comfort and pleasantness and peace, healing. Do a few rounds of tonglen, however you feel you would like to do that for specific people or for all beings or both. Without losing track of your own awareness of how you feel in this moment. And now letting go of any visualization, any conceptuality that we have, just letting go, but being aware of any thoughts that may arise as we're sitting, resting in open awareness for another moment. Just wide open, spacious awareness. And coming back to study and contemplation mode at your own pace. Okay, does anybody have anything that they would like to say before? What I thought I would do is just go through some highlights of Pema Chodron's and Tim's explanations. Everybody's got the handout, so you can read it for yourself as often as you feel is helpful. And then we would talk, you know, like focus more specifically on each of the realms to get a sense of it. And then we can talk if anybody has any experiences or thoughts they'd like to share about the realms and how they apply to us. Hi, Nam Dak. And hi, John. John, I sent you record permission. Do you want to do the recording? Okay, so Mark, you're off the hook.
Okay, I've got the first part here.
Okay, oh, okay, good.
Okay, so you didn't want to include the meditation?
No, you can include the meditation. I don't know how you guys want to work that out.
Okay.
Anyway, but it's okay to include it or not include it, whatever makes the most sense in terms of how it was recorded today. All right, anybody have anything? Deidre, I'm going to unmute you. Oops, if I can get the cursor to go there. Okay, Deidre.
Yeah, just the first paragraph of the different realms, mm-hmm. Very helpful to read, especially during the times when there's so much polarity in the country mm-hmm. and in the world, actually. Because it just made me realize the whole futility of trying to change anybody's mind. You know, if a mind is a fearful mind, it's going to see the world that way.
Yeah.
You can't talk anybody down from that.
Yeah. You're talking about the first paragraph. Are you talking about the first paragraph in Tim's commentary?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Of the realms.
Right. Yeah.
You know, just like how we perceive the world. Very difficult to change anybody's perception of the world.
Yeah. Because it comes from there. Would you like to read us that paragraph, Deidre?
It says, when we don't understand mind, it becomes the lens through which we see the world. A peaceful mind sees a peaceful world. A fearful mind sees a threatening world. An agitated mind sees a chaotic world. An impoverished mind sees a desolate world. When mind is stable, we see the world as it is, open, fluid, workable. Yeah, pretty. I mean, when you teach, you know, like these different realms, people always think there's something outside of us.
Yeah.
There's something outside of reality.
Yeah.
This is our reality. I mean, it's where we live.
Yeah.
I mean, and we can all go through all these different phases even. They don't even have to be one.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a point that Pema Chodron made. Yeah, we could be any realm at any moment.
Right.
Yeah. But I see your point. I mean, I think it's really true, and it is helpful to have this sort of framework for looking at, like, for discussions with other people that they're maybe in a completely different realm than you are, and it just looks like reality to each one of us. We think we're living in reality.
Yeah.
And that can be very frustrating. But
it's really amazing. You know, I just dipped into, like, the NRA a little bit, you know, just to kind of look at what people are looking at, what they're saying. Get some understanding, because I have family members who are also members of NRA, and I just wonder how our view can be so different about the whole idea. And then I realized they actually believe that they're going to protect the country at some point. They're very patriotic, in some way, although in a completely different way than I would think.
Yeah.
You know, I would like to protect the country by not polluting. I don't think a gun is going to help that in any way.
Yeah.
So, but we're so wired, so completely different. And it was just awesome, really, reading some of these things and the reactions and how strong they are. It was pretty awesome.
And the certainty of it, if you're used to coming from reading at a particular end of the political spectrum, for example, it is really helpful to look at the other end, because you see that, I mean, whatever the tone at either end may be, people have reasoned positions. Like, they have reasons for feeling. They can express reasons for feeling the way that they feel and seeing things the way they see. And I find it does help a lot to be aware of that. Like, my reality looks really weird to some people. And who knows? Lama Jinzong, did you have a comment? I'm unmuting you.
I think what brought this thought to mind is when Deidre said, you know, that you can't, like, she didn't use the word convinced, but the idea of you can't, you know, change anyone's mind. And what was very, very meaningful to me many years ago when Ari Goldfield was teaching here, once Kempo Sultan Jamsa was unable to, and Ari Goldfield was his translator for many years, and he taught, I believe the text was maybe the Stars of Wisdom. Anyway, the point is...
Yeah, I think not the Moon of Wisdom.
No, I think it was...
Oh, maybe he taught more than one time, yeah.
Yes, he taught... Yeah. Anyway, whichever one it was.
Yeah.
His preface, or I guess you'd say preamble, I'm not sure, but the point is, every one of us has an opinion. The problem is that everyone thinks their opinion is the right opinion. Mm-hmm. And moreover, everyone thinks their opinion is universal truth. And so so that the reality is that each and every one of us, like when I realized during my second retreat, when I got, well, anyway, certain experiences or interactions arose, and I finally really got it. It's like, it's just my opinion. Like, my thought is just that. It's just a thought. It has nothing to do with anything objective. There's no ultimate right, ultimate wrong, you know, beyond the thought that there's nothing truly out there that you can say has its own characteristics that are good or bad. But the point being, it's just my thought. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, actually, in the last few years, especially even when Lama Norla Rinpoche was still alive, I recognized that whenever I was talking, you know, in a group or, you know, individually, I could sense how attached I am to whatever it is I'm saying, that there's tremendous ego clinging to the moment I open my mouth about anything other than just like functional, like you do it this way and to fix something, you know what I mean, where you could say. But anything else that was totally subjective was a way of reinforcing my ego clinging, because, you know, I could feel there's an attachment, there's a tension, you know, there's emotionality that builds up. And so I actively stopped talking that much in group environments, and especially over just sort of conversations, because it was my way of cutting through this constant reinforcing of my own ego clinging. So I'm just sharing, you know, from a point of view of, that's why when people talk about politics, it's so difficult, because to me, everything's in the realm of emotionality. You know, I mean, everything's informed from that. So I, you know, this idea that you could change anyone's mind, like Deidre says, what's unbelievable is that basically we're all in our own set of personal hallucinations. Yeah. And so, you know, it's not an issue of even trying to change someone's mind. We're all seeing things through our own, you know, prism.
Yeah.
That's all.
I thought that was very eloquently expressed, and I really appreciate those thoughts. And I, you know, I totally resonate with that. And I think that's, I mean, I would almost say it's the single most useful thing I've gotten from my 40 years with the Dharma, is to understand it's just the way I see it. Like, it's just my opinion. It's never going to be a statement of reality.
Yeah.
Okay, Andy, I think you were, you had something to say?
Yeah.
And then Chet.
I kind of agree with Deirdre, and certainly have experienced what Ginseng is talking about. I just wanted to throw in a bumper sticker I saw. Maybe other people have seen it. It sort of sums it up. You don't have to believe everything you think. You know? And then there's a quote from Jean-Paul Sartre, "Meaning is a story we tell ourselves later."
That's nice.
Yeah, and so... what I found, right now I'm working in some very contentious situations where people are running at very high steam with very opinionated things, very polarized.
Andy, I lost you. I lost your audio. I think you might have frozen.
I can do nothing but wait. Try to.
Okay.
Oops. Okay. So like with all these people at each other's throats over very contentious issues, I find the only thing that seems to work is if I can remain neutral and really try to understand each one's take without believing it or sort of giving it solidity, they tend to calm down.
Yeah.
I think that people, when they're polarized, are looking for opposition to further solidify their place.
Yes.
That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Well, you probably have some skill in that area anyway with your training as a therapist.
Yeah, maybe.
Right? Yeah. So it might come more naturally to you than it might to some of us. But I have found that too in a situation where somebody's really angry and hostile with me, to just be neutral. It takes a while for them to calm down, but they do, because there's nothing bouncing back at them. That's like a method I've really used in those kind of situations. And it really works.
Well, I think it honors them, you know. It honors the fact that they have the same potential we do.
Yeah.
You lose sight of that, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, neutral, saying neutral, but neutral in sort of an accepting, receptive way to what whatever is they're coming from. So thanks. I think Chet also had something to say.
Yeah, hi. So Hi.
It's been a while.
It's been a while, quite a while. I really took this as looking at the nature of my own mind, and it, you know, as a newbie, it shifted some things for me pretty quickly. I in terms of doing the four foundations every day, and I look at the, you know, the preciousness of human life when you go actually go through all the realms, and I kind of had this aha moment the other day, and I went, oh, so these are my realms. You know, this is the nature of my own realms. This is the whole psychological thing. And what I appreciate in Tim's comment is his comment makes nature of mind is not often taught.
Yeah.
It's so easy, we don't trust it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the four, like, reasons that we don't get the nature of mind. It's too easy. Like, when it's pointed out to you, just go, what?
Yeah, because when I first started doing this, I was reading some of these. I thought, yeah. Aha, that's my mother. Aha.
Yeah.
That's my husband. And then I went, actually, you know, there's an expression in self-help programs in the 12 steps that when one finger is pointing at somebody, there are three pointing back at you.
Yeah.
And I saw this and I thought, yeah, these are really about me.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that insight. And you also have training as a therapist. I mean, that's your field, right? Psychotherapy.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Who else? Fanny, I'm unmuting you. Oh, it didn't unmute. Fanny, it's not unmuting. Yeah, there you go.
So living in the Midwest has been very eye-opening. And what Deidre was talking about, gun control, I've have many, many friends. I mean, not many friends here, but new friends and new colleagues. And really seeing from their standpoint about owning weapons, you know, not wanting to cause harm, but protecting themselves from the, you know, the large homicide. Segregation here, you know, it's very rampant in some ways, and people shooting just for skill. And, you know, I have clients that are police officers and they're holding guns, and, you know, I held one. I was like scared to hold one. I'd never been that, but I wanted to just feel like what the armor felt like in their uniform, and just that experience of going, okay, something I attached to this as such an evil thing, you know, there are other ways to, as everyone's saying, that a different lens to look at it when you're trying to understand someone else's position. So, you know, I still feel that, you know, having weaponry, and when people's mind are not tame, they may choose it, but there is a more of a comprehension and an understanding about the other way people live, you know, and they have a right, and they have a right as well.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. As Lama Jinlong said, our thoughts are just our thoughts.
Yeah.
Our judgments are just our thoughts. It's great to have our minds opened that way, you know, and I think that it only happens when our mind opens up a little bit already. I mean, and I guess that process has helped when we encounter people who feel differently than we do, or who see the world differently than we do. But I mean, people encounter people with different opinions all the time, and they just clash. And we're seeing so much of that now, but to actually be able to drop the defenses a bit and open yourself up to somebody else's reality, I think it could save the world if the world is savable. And thank you, Fanny. Yeah,
I'd like to second that opinion.
Yeah.
That I think if everybody realized that it was just their opinion,
yeah,
more of a, there's a guy around here who's an Iraqi and was raised up in Iraq. And
you're in D.C. area, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's sort of famous, Andy Shalal. Uh-huh. And he runs peace cafes. And he talks about how everybody used to just get together, all the different religions and different people with different religious views used to get together and just discuss things with each other and have tea and cookies and dinner and stuff with each other, and it wasn't this super contentious thing like it is now. So
yeah, we long for the good old days, right?
Yeah.
They didn't seem so good at the time, and in many ways they really weren't.
Right.
But I think that we have lost that element of being able to talk across political opinions and other kinds of, you know, religious divisions and things like that.
Including in your own mind. Give yourself a break, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. You mean about your yourself?
Yeah.
To be accepting of yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mark. Anybody else? All right. Well, I appreciate that we started off with some excellent discussion. It seems like everybody has read the summaries. I think maybe what we'll do is talk a little bit about the more practical advice here. Everybody seems to have a very good understanding of what the realms are. And if you don't feel that you do yet, if you didn't get a chance to read the summaries, I encourage you to do that. I'm just going to read over the basic view, which I extracted from Pema Chodron's teachings. Like, these are the points these are the points to understand about her explanation of the realms, which comes from Trungpa Rinpoche primarily. So first of all, that there's nothing we can feel. I'm on page 2 of the Pema Chodron summary, if anybody wants to read along. There's nothing we can feel that we need to be ashamed of, that isn't worthy of our attention, kindness, and warmth. So that's the first thing, is that we're going into, like, when we're looking at our own emotional state, especially when it's upset in some way, the first thing is to drop the judgment about it, because that's what comes up. Like, we not only feel distressed in some way, but then we feel bad about being distressed, especially if it's one of those, like, sort of unpopular emotions like anger, feeling that you're not worthy is like tends to be more private. But when you're angry, everybody knows it, and you can feel judgment from other people. Certainly you feel judgment towards yourself. So that's the first thing, is that whatever we're feeling, we don't need to be ashamed of it. It's just a feeling, as Lama Jinzang pointed out. It's just a thought. It's just our own internal emotion. It's worthy of being looked at. It's worthy of being looked at with kindness and warmth and acceptance of ourself. So that's number one. And that's really hard to remember on the spot. So if we could just remember that, just like drop the judgment of how you're being in this moment, I think things would get a lot better. We would just, it allows the whole thing to open up a bit. Whereas being judgmental about it just doubles down on the energy of it somehow. So second point is that these realms are mental states rather than solid, fixed, or permanent aspects of our identity. Angry is not who I am. Angry is just a mental state at this moment in my stream of being. It's just like one passing moment. Maybe it feels like a long passing moment. And Pema Chodron says the hell realms, part of the suffering of the hell realms is that they seem to last forever. So it can feel like it's forever. And it, to me, it kind of hooks in with all the previous times you felt that way. So it just feels monolithic sometimes, whatever that emotional reaction is. But really, it's a fleeting state of mind. And so the good news, Pema Chodron says, is that you can work with your mind. Like, it's not who you are. It's not built in, hardwired. It's just a state of mind. You can work with that. And if you work with your mind, there's no need to be imprisoned. We have methods to free ourselves from being stuck in these emotional states, these very unpleasant and sometimes harmful emotional states. Third point is that the samsaric realms are in contrast to the pure realms. So in any given moment, you can be in samsara or you can be in a pure realm, in nirvana. And that's what Gampopa, that's like the first thing Gampopa teaches. The very first line of Ornament of Precious Liberation is you're either in samsara or you're in nirvana. There's like no in-between state. It's one or the other. And I think this is a really helpful statement of that same truth. When you're caught in anger or you're feeling deficient, it can either be a hell or a hungry ghost realm, or it can be a pure land. An emotion can be the source of suffering, or it can be the source of liberation. It just depends on how we're looking at it. So the skill we're going to be developing is to look at it in a constructive accepting way, like with the awareness that we're talking about a fleeting mental state. You can just wait it out. You know, there's constructive ways to work with it, or you can just wait it out, but it's not who you are. It's just how you feel in this moment. Next point, whatever our state of mind, it has a ripple effect on those around us and on the world. And Pema Chodron came back to this again and again in the retreat, the ripple effect. She opened one session by saying, how's your ripple effect? Just to understand. And we've talked about this before, you know, in the context of the 37 practices. Whatever emotional state we're in, it does radiate out in some way. And so if someone angry walks into a room, it changes the dynamic of the whole room. If someone joyful walks into the room, or someone just, you know, completely open-minded walks into the room, it changes the dynamic of the room. So it's a good thing to be aware of, that our state of mind has a ripple effect. And if we can have a positive, open state of mind, that's going to help other people as well as ourselves. Next, becoming intimately familiar with our own emotional reactivity, like getting to know our own emotional states with acceptance, is the seed of compassion toward others. If we can accept it in ourselves, if we can learn to accept it in ourselves, then we look upon other people as the same. We can accept it in them. We understand it's a fleeting emotional state in someone else too. It's not who they are. Because of our own experience, we know how hard it is for someone else. So we could sympathize or empathize or accept someone who's acting, you know, who's angry and is acting really negatively out of that, because we know how it feels to be caught up in that. And so the last point, this is actually a very joyful situation. This is, Pema Chodron said these words, this is actually a very joyful situation. The realms can be known, and knowing them is what frees us. So the practical advice in this retreat is how to do that. How do you get to know your own emotional states? And how can you learn to look at them, to experience them with acceptance, with kindness, with a sense of warmth towards yourself instead of judgmentalness? And then that state of mind not only ripples out to influence other people around you, but it also gives you a lens through which to look at other people in a more compassionate way, because you're developing compassion towards yourself. Because you're caught in confusion. You start to see that you're caught in confusion when you're stuck in an emotional reaction. And so then you can look at other people's emotional reactivity as confusion in the same way, and just give them the same space that you're learning to give yourself. So does anybody have anything they'd like to say before I go through these sections where she gives specific advice about how to do this? Patrick, I'm going to unmute you. And then Joanne.
So I'm a little confused. Is death an emotional state?
Death?
Right.
I'm not sure how, like, can you explain how you might view it as an emotional state?
Well, you leave a realm, don't you?
Only if you're in a realm.
You're in a realm?
Only if you're in a realm, you leave the realm.
Well, what about the ordinary Joe? They die and then where does the Bardo fit in with this?
Well, I mean, the teachings are that, well, first of all, we're operating here from the point of view that the realms are psychological states, as Mingyur Rinpoche's father Tulku Urgen explained to him when he was very young.
So that's kind of definitive to me. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not prepared to argue against that, but it occurs to me that throws off a lot of other parts of our traditional Buddhist story, including the Bardo and the next life.
Yeah, well, it's I think it's presented in a more sort of literal, concrete way, but I think it's always been understood as that these are mental states. The Bardo is a mental state, in my understanding. I don't understand it in a different way than that. And it's taught that if you attain realization, you don't go through the Bardo. There isn't any Bardo. Those things don't even have to arise if you die with full awareness. And Lama Jinzong, please jump in anytime if you have anything to add to this. So
I'm sorry, I did have a thought, but it's okay. Sure. I just unmuted.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I feel, Patrick, somehow I got confused just by your first question about, well, is dying, well, how did you phrase it? You said, is dying...
Is death a realm?
Is death a realm? I mean, was that what your question was? You were saying, is death a realm? And I mean, the point is, as children and all the teachers like have been pointing out, we're not talking about, I mean, physical death itself is illusory. But the concept is that mind itself, everyone, all beings' minds themselves, continue. And then this description of, and mental states continue, so that the concept of death is just, there's a passage like death is the same thing of then going to sleep. It's between waking state and a dream state or sleeping state and dream state. So the bardo was just a term for an interim period. So the bardo could be the time while you're born to the time that you die. So I'm not sure what you mean by is death, what was the question? Is death a realm? A realm, because the whole concept of a realm in this case is in each instant affiliated with a certain mental state. So in each instant is a bardo, as it were, and it's affiliated to a realm in terms of if it's involved in some kind of emotional state. So the very act of dying itself is just, in my understanding, it seems to be just change.
Yeah, it's just
from
a transition.
One thing to another. Yeah. And because death, we go through death every moment. You know, the previous moment is finished. So effectively, that we're taught, it's like we experience death every moment. As each new moment arises, the previous moment has finished. So that's what I would say. And I don't know if that's helpful or not.
That would be like a definition of a sentient being, was a being that has emotional states.
Well, that is mm-hmm. true. That yeah. is the mm-hmm. whole concept.
Yeah.
So that's really what I was looking for. Is
yeah. Yeah.
So do you feel that you got an answer to your question?
I've kicked it down the road.
Okay. Yeah. Enough? I mean, do you have any follow-up to that? Or, Marilyn, do you have something to add here or something else?
I have a question. Thinking the one you used, that sort of saying that these emotional states aren't hardwired into us. Yeah. It made me think of the research that's done on adverse childhood experiences, which, those, they do sort of hardwire your neural pathways. I mean, I know that's not 100% fixed, but still, it comes close to being hardwired.
Yeah.
Close to
I've read that research and I know what you're talking about. But it's degrees. It's degrees of... what's the word for that? I can't think. There's degrees of how fixed we are in a realm or how stuck we are in a realm. And you can be very stuck in a realm that comes out of how you experienced life when you were an infant or a young child, or if something really traumatic happened to you in your life, especially at a young age, then you could really be pretty stuck in a realm. I mean, that's kind of what trauma is. So there's degrees of stuckness, but I think the point still stands that there's still states of mind, but there's definitely a physical component. I mean, science has shown there's physical components to how, like, the brain is structured, how the brain develops, that can make you more or less likely to experience certain emotional states. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, so that's a really good point. It can be, it's not necessarily an easy process. You know, your ability to change from one emotional state to another or to open up an emotional state can be more or less fluid depending on your circumstances. And that's something that I get to you, and I forget who came first, so we'll have to sort that out, who's next. But that's something that Tim talked about briefly about towards the end of his thing about karma, and we come to our right. Your particular realm is based on many causes and conditions by virtue of taking birth, your karmic inheritance, your childhood experiences, the places you've lived. Everything we do leaves an imprint. Nothing is ever lost. So, yeah, depending on what circumstances we're born into or what we've experienced in our life, we could be more stuck in a realm than another person might be stuck in a realm. But I think it still comes to the same thing. And the brain is malleable. I mean, the brain can change. I don't know if that in some cases how much it can change in this lifetime can be limited. But when we die, when we enter that realm of death, that's all gone. Like the whatever we experience physically is gone. And presumably there may be karmic or mental imprints that we're going to carry with us. But it's still, I think the point still stands that they're basically psychological states. So who was next? I, Lama Jinzong had her hand up. Anybody else? Chet, I think you might have been first. I'm going to call on you first, and then we'll get to Lama Jinzong.
Okay, I think actually this kind of fits in our discussion. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, the neuropsychology of a traumatic experience is imprinted in the brain. You don't mm-hmm. lose that, like being hypervigilant.
Right.
Someone is that they're going to be hypervigilant. But what I think is different is your reaction to it. That's what I think we're talking about in terms of what the mind does with the information. My example would be prior trauma treatment, early trauma treatment used to focus on repeating the story, going through the story over and over and over again. And what research showed is that all that happened was people just got more and more traumatized. They didn't really get better. They actually continued to get worse. Mm-hmm. So now current trauma treatment says, well, once you have acknowledged the experience, you have an awareness of it. So how do you then deal with it? So when the anxiety comes up or the fear comes up or the memory or the hypervigilance comes up, what do you do with that? How do you someone used the phrase earlier, reframe it so that you don't have the same reaction to it. You can't lose the past. It's who you are, but how you deal with it in the present, really, I think that this is about the nature of mind, is that we all have these experiences, we all have these imprints, but what is it that we choose to do with it now?
Yeah, but I think as Marilyn may have been pointing out, some people have more choice than others. You know, the choices are easier if you don't have a deeply traumatic past that has really seriously imprinted your brain. Hi, Richard. Okay. Glad that you're here. Anyway, I appreciate your answering that from your expertise. This happens to be, you know, more in your field than in mine, this question. So I really appreciate that clarification. Did that help, Marilyn? Yeah. So I'm going to go to Lama Jinzong and then Richard. Oh, sorry, Jinzong, I think I remuted you.
Okay, so I guess what I wanted to just take a step back, but the term hardwire is I just wanted to point out again that what's so liberating about Buddhism, for me anyway, is that there's no such thing as hardwire because everything's changing constantly. And in recognizing that there is the flux, this whole idea that you could even keep something the same is impossible, you know? So it's like, of course, everything is changing. So we sort of talk about, I get it, the hardwired, you know, when something's hardwired in, but that's only with the belief that we somehow exist. The brain itself, they say, right, every 10 years or something, all the cells are completely different or something. The point being is just, there is no such thing as even hardwiring. It's just the belief, once again, that, you know, so when you say, I can't change, I can't change, but it's being in denial of the fact that we're constantly changing. And that's what is causing so much distress all the time, is that, you know, we can't control everything. Everything's constantly changing. I mean, I'm not talking about so dramatically with everything, but that's all I wanted to say is, you know, so this whole idea that there is such a thing as something that cannot be changed is in denial of the fact that it's everything's changing all the time.
Yeah.
And that for me is very liberating. I mean, it's what enables us to feel relaxed and say, oh my God, I really can just let go of that. It's over. Mm. Not to say that it didn't happen, but as you said, whoever said it, or I guess previous chat, this concept is what we change. And in fact, the only thing we have control over is how we react to our own thoughts. You know, and like he's saying, we can develop different mechanisms or different ways of reacting to our own thoughts. That's all.
Okay, thank you. I just want to say before I get to Richard and then Andy, that I think what Marilyn's talking about, though, there's a validity to that too. If you've read anything about how the brain develops in childhood, someone with a really traumatic childhood has very different brain structures, like very different physical structure. It's like a person who's paralyzed. If somebody's paralyzed, like you can make the same arguments, but it doesn't make them able to get up and walk. You know, they don't ever have that choice to get up and walk because their body is paralyzed. And maybe, you know, through working with it mentally, maybe they could unparalyze themselves. And I actually don't think that's impossible in certain circumstances. But I think that, again, as we're seeing, as we talked about earlier with how each of us sees reality differently, we each also have a different body structure and a different brain structure. And in some cases, if you have certain kind of brain structure, it's much harder to let go of something. You're still going to go through the same process and you're going to use the same tools, but it is harder in some circumstances than others.
I don't want to be misunderstood. I wasn't implying that somehow you, because that's the whole argument that, oh, if I could, you know, you could cure yourself of cancer. So therefore, you know, cancers, I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that
Marilyn was using the word hardwired. It's, you know, it's a metaphorical thing and it doesn't mean like 100%, I think. It doesn't mean that it couldn't change. It is harder, you know, anyway, but I think Chet helped to clarify that too. So it's a tough question. And what the point is, as I think this is the point that everybody's basically making, we work with the methods. Like we can change how we respond to things. However hard or easy it is, we can work with these methods and it can help. So Richard, sorry you had to wait so long. You're unmuted now.
It's just, I thought I had an answer to you all and I was waiting to just, there is a hard wire, but you know, our brain, due to the like neuroplasticity that the studies over our brain, our thoughts can actually change the hard wiring instead of vice versa, like a computer would be. You put new software in and the hardware would be the same, but with us, software can change the hardware. You understand?
Yeah.
We can create new connections, new grooves. And didn't you all have somebody in Washington that had a stroke or something like that and brought himself back to be able to walk? And I seem to remember meeting somebody up there.
Yeah, John might have something to say about that. That was John.
What? Who was the guy I met up there that had done that?
That's John. He's raising his hand.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. He's here. He could speak to that, actually.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I talked to him, but I just don't remember now who he looked like.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, great. That's okay, thank you. Thank you very much. John, did you have anything you wanted to say?
Yes.
Okay, you're unmuted now. Yeah.
Okay, so I was thinking when you all doing that, I was going to chat it, but thinking it up as hardwired equaling being the same as habit. Mm-hmm. A habit, that's hard, you know, as hardwired as it's getting, because it's a habit, you know, it's not permanent and it can be changed, but it's so ingrained that it looks like it's, you know, permanent and fixed. So I would equate it more with habit and agree with everyone that it can be changed. And it's,
you have some personal experience along those lines.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, John. All right. Now I saw Fanny and Richard. I'm going to go back to Richard and let him finish.
Oh, I just wanted to add to what John said. Yeah. And that's why we're so focused on repetition in our practices, is that we're changing that habit. And eventually, like, connections and grooves and things like that in our brain will change with repetition. I mean, a lot of repetition and a lot of different responses. Eventually, they become the habit, although I haven't seen that happen yet. But you know,
I bet you have.
Eventually, it happens.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I'm going to go to Fanny and then to Joanne, and I apologize if that's out of order of when you raised your hand. Fanny, you're unmuted.
John and Richard already said it. I thought what came to my mind was habitual tendency.
Yeah.
And same thing, habit, habitual tendency, seeing that it's the neuronal grooves, the protection, everything that we built around that, what we considered safe, like a safety place. And then, of course, it all rips apart when there's a trigger and yeah. you get to be in a new moment with it. That's all.
Yeah.
Habitual tendency. Same yeah. thought process with us Scorpios guys.
Yeah.
The other Scorpios.
Thank you, Fanny. Joanne, you're unmuted.
Okay. In line with our emphasis on neuroplasticity, I use the word familiarity and 37 practices. And I think that from our recitation, I've committed a few to memory. Mm-hmm. So I guess it goes along with mind training. I guess in my own way, I'm trying to perform some neuroplasticity on the that I've formed and my responses.
Yes.
So number 11, action bodhicitta, mm-hmm. and number 20 have been the highlights.
And remind us what number 20 is of the 37 20, practices.
To conquer my own aggression.
Yes.
how to tame my inner enemy of poisons of aggression, anger, and hate. Not that I have that propensity, but I catch myself in an inner anger and saying, trying to, through meditation, work through it. But again, the Dharma path is a transformation. It's an ongoing journey up until the bardo, so to speak. But again, the emphasis through Chenrezig is developing a pure mind. And that takes a lot of virtue. I don't know if I'll ever reach that point, but I'm certainly going to give it one good try. All right.
Thank you. So I guess, I think the point that's becoming clear here is that whatever frontier we're working on, and we're all working on frontiers, we apply the methods and we just keep going and apply them repeatedly, and we can, it does have an effect. As Pema Chidren said, you know, even if you don't, you may not notice it, but every single time you change the way you react, it changes something, something shifts. And she said at the level of your DNA, at the level of your karma, something shifts even if you can't see it. And by doing it again and again, you actually can start to shift in a more noticeable way. I mean, I certainly am not the same person with the same reactivity that I was and had when I first met the Dharma in late 1970s. You know, things have shifted, but I haven't always noticed the shifting happening. So I feel very positive and confident that these methods really work. And all we have to do is apply them. And that's the hard part, is to actually remember them on the spot and apply them. So what I'd like to do is just read through, or we could just make it a discussion. Like, does everybody feel like you understand what the method is? Like, what do you do when you find that anger coming up, or that sense of hopelessness coming up, or that sense of jealousy coming up? What do you do? Like, what's the first thing you do? Valerie, I'm going to call upon you.
You observe it.
Yeah. You become aware of it. Exactly. Like Tim says, that's the whole difference. Once you're aware of it, you're not in the river anymore. Even if the feelings are still swirling, you're observing them once awareness kicks in. So the first thing you do is observe with awareness. It's like, what is going on here? How am I? So that's the beginning of that meditation. Just sit quietly and feel what you feel right now. You tune in and you ask yourself, okay, what's happening? How am I feeling? And Tim says you should do it like a grandparent would to their grandchild. How you doing? How you doing today? How are you feeling? Tell me about it. So that's number one. What's number two? There's another aspect to it. We're not simply observing with awareness, but we're observing in a particular way. Valerie, you're still unmuted.
I learned this here, and I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for, but you put space around it.
Well, yes, actually, you're going through the actual sequence, and that's it. Yes, you. So what Pema Chidren says is the first thing you do is you feel your feet on the ground. Like, the first thing you do is really disengage yourself by opening up your awareness in some way. And an easy thing to go to is feel your feet grounded on the ground, or your seat grounded in your chair. Like, become aware of your physical body. And then you open up your awareness more and you become aware of the space around you. You're just opening your awareness so that it's not stuck. It's not being carried away by the river anymore. You're pulling yourself out of the river by feeling your physical body and the space around you. So that's number one. And then the component that I was actually looking for is how do you observe it? Marilyn, I see you talking. Marilyn?
Without judgment.
Yeah, without judgment. And even more than that, with the kind of kindness and love that the grandparent would be feeling towards their child who's so upset, their grandchild who's so upset. You look at your experience and your feelings with actual warmth, with kindness, with unconditional positive regard, non-judgmentalness. Yeah, Richard, and then Fanny.
I was just going to give a little experience of my own. I'm really prone to panic attacks still. But I've learned to, when I start coming on, I'm like, okay, there's that heart beating. And, you know, I'll feel it. Yeah. I'll become very aware. And I wait. And then I go, there's the heat going up into my head. You know, and I'm not scared of it anymore. It's the same experience.
Yeah, that's exactly.
It's not the same mental. And then the thoughts will start rolling through. I'm like, here they come. You know, and I just watch it. And same thing, but it's not the same experience of that thing.
Yeah. Well, your realm, that's just being in a realm. Like, you just boil it down to being in a realm, you're just in a particular realm and you're applying really the exact same remedy, which is you just become aware of what's going on. You tune into what's going on. But you tune in, and this is, I think, the hardest part. You tune in a way that doesn't make you feel worse. I'm such a horrible person, or I'm like, why do I panic? This is like no big deal.
No. Yeah. I went through that in the past.
Yeah.
But now I do. I'm very aware. I wait for the next thing, or it won't come that time, you know. And it's very helpful.
That's great.
It's changed the whole mental reaction to the panic attack.
Yes.
Kind of like, oh, that old thing, you know. With anger or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that experience. Was there somebody I was going to call on next before Lama Jinzong, or is she next? I think I had said I was going to call on Fanny next. Okay, Fanny.
So Pema Chodron talked about being in the samsaric realm or the pure realm. So an example here, when we're having awareness about a trigger and we're doing it with loving kindness towards ourselves, that's a pure realm within the samsaric realm of the trigger coming up, correct? It's not that we've already gone to the peaceful place, but we created space, we've applied a method of breath work, we've chosen not to be reactive to the other, the trigger. It seems to me that, you know, it has a different texture in the body. With that. So is that,
I don't know that I can say exactly when you're actually in the pure realm, but I think what it is it's pulling you towards it. As I think she said, you're starting to shift. Shifting it from being stuck in a negative realm to being in a pure realm. And so you're somewhere on that spectrum. I don't know when it actually becomes fully a pure realm. I'm not sure I've experienced that. And I'm not sure what her intention was either. But I think the idea, again, we don't want to get too judgmental and too specific. Like, am I in the pure realm yet? But you know that you're shifting.
Right. Yeah.
You know that you're shifting. That it could be what she calls a pure realm.
There's like a kindness.
Whoops, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a kindness to yourself and the other individual, if that was the trigger. There's a kindness that exposes itself and expands, which shifts the energy.
If it shifts to feeling compassion towards yourself and the other person, and you're not feeling the anger or whatever it is now, I'd say you've hit the pure realm. because that is the transformation to wisdom, seeing it more as it is, and to compassion.
It may be 24 hours later.
Yeah.
it's not always in the moment.
But once you pull yourself out, you've got a trajectory.
Yeah.
You know, and you may have to keep pulling yourself out, but once you start the process, you got the momentum and that shift is happening.
Yeah.
So thank you. I'm going to go to Lama Jinzong now. Thank you for waiting, Lama Jinzong. I'm not succeeding in unmuting you, so I'll let you unmute yourself.
Mute myself.
Yeah, you're okay. There you are.
The thing that I'm finding is a natural thing for me is actually resistance, allowing myself to even experience the feeling. I mean, there's certain things, which is, I guess there's a certain, you know, so it's levels, because whether it's anxiety, fear, anger, if I'm feeling, maybe that's something I shouldn't be feeling. So I resist I resist going there. So it's a very interesting thing. It's, when she says the most important thing to fully contact the feeling, you know, and feel it with it is to like versus resisting and giving oneself permission, allowing oneself to experience. I feel that that's, you know, something I have to work with, because when I was reading this, you know, the things and just trying to do it as I was reading, you know, and I've had a certain, because, you know, as facility director of the monastery, there's an awful lot on my plate, and certain things change, and someone says they're going to do something and they can't. And I notice that immediately I get like in this weirdo thing of anxiety, fear, but it's really actual resistance, you know, like I don't want to even go there, you know. So it was just interesting to see that there's that component.
Yeah. I think dropping resistance is a big part of this whole thing. Sometimes we resist looking, like, but sometimes we're caught in an emotion and there's like some kind of emotional payoff to being caught in it, like righteous anger, for example. And you don't really want to, like, there's a pleasurability to it that you kind of don't want to give that up yet. There's a resistance to starting the process and, you know, and letting that dissipate. I guess there's all kinds of resistance, and that's probably not exactly what you were talking about, but.
I know what you're referring to there, but it's just allowing myself to experience it, you know, versus resisting it, you know.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a quality. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is the first frontier, is simply allowing yourself to feel what you feel. And for some of us, for some people, it's very hard to know what emotion you're feeling. You know, there's like a numbness or a resistance, and it takes a long time for the actual emotional feeling to surface as something you can fully feel. At least that's my experience.
Or define which emotion it actually is. Yeah. Once I allow myself to even look, which is why your initial meditation is so helpful. I think you said today's was Pema Chodron's.
Yeah.
Because you're really, first, like, what are you feeling? But then it's like, wait, let's go with the physical stuff first. And then let's start looking at the emotion, allowing it to, you know, allowing to both look and sort of like begin to examine, but at the same time, let go and relax, you know, so you're not like traumatized by trying to even understand what you're feeling. It's interesting.
Yeah. Helpful. Okay. Thank you. I'm going to see if anybody else has anything to say, and we're getting towards the end of class. So I'll use the last 5 minutes to wrap it up. I'm going to go to Dan and then to Chet. Okay, Dan, you're on.
Yeah. I've definitely been resisting our whole new life here in West Virginia. So kind of like a broken heart a lot of times. So there's there's like a very softness, but that leads to like kind of your heart awakening. So I've been experiencing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's been making me more open to the people I encounter around me, and the fact that my whole family's changing too, all of us.
Yeah.
So, and that I'm holding on so desperately to how it used to be. And I'm just relaxing with that. It's hard, but I am.
So. Yeah, it's about letting yourself feel what you feel. You don't have to go, oh, I shouldn't be feeling that. I really got to get over this. It's like, okay, you have to really acknowledge how you feel. And that's actually, one of them says, that you probably both of them said, you can't actually liberate yourself. Liberation can't occur without becoming intimately familiar with the realm. You can't get out of the realm without getting to know the realm. So the first step is just to become aware of it, allow it, not judge it, and just feel what you feel. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
And Chet, I think you were next.
Yes, actually, you just segued to what my question is.
Okay.
So my experience of change is that it involves, like, I get this awareness that we're talking about, and then the acceptance of it, but there's always this action piece. I'm kind of missing, and also I'm missing something here about the action piece. And my example would be, like, since we've been working on the 37 steps and the Paramita course you recommended, I'm really trying to work on my criticalness. And I came to understand that my criticalness is a lack of generosity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been very aware of that. Since you talked about grandchildren, my grandkids were just here with my daughter and son-in-law, and they're here. And I really saw my criticalness. I got very aware of it, and I accepted it. But that I found that what I had to do was, it took me a little time, but after I would make a comment, maybe hours later, maybe the next day, mm-hmm. I would have to go and say, hey, look, I said this to you yesterday, and it was very critical, and I didn't mean that way.
Yeah.
And for me, that's how change really occurs. But I'm not getting that step in any of the things we read from Tim or Pema about actual change. I get the awareness part and I get the acceptance. Mm-hmm. Am I missing something in there?
Well, I think first of all, you might be talking about something a little bit outside the scope, but it's still valid. If you've done something that hurt somebody in some way, then you make amends. You do take an action. But you're also talking about...
I'm talking about all of it.
So critical.
Yeah, but I think of all the realms as we're going through this, because I think there's an awareness, but you could, unless, I'm not getting the change step.
Well, because the point of this is not to put the emphasis on change, because when we do that, we're not accepting ourselves. Like, the first step is actually to accept that you're in the realm, to just get to know the realm. And I think that the idea is that the change happens organically.
Well, you could just say, well, why couldn't I just say, oh, well, you know, I'm a very critical person. I'm just going to accept that. And just that's just who I am. I'm hitting a roadblock in my head.
But the whole thing is coming out of the idea that we don't want to be in the realms. Like, the realms are not good places to be. They're prisons. So being critical is a prison. You know, it's not a pure realm. And so we want to get out of the realms, but you can't just directly get out of the realm. Pema Chodron said something at some point, which I didn't transcribe or I didn't include in the summary. I think I just lost that. I just lost what I was going to say. Sorry. Tim did that once and it made me feel so happy. I said, oh, I forgot what I was going to say. Just say again what you just said then. Maybe that will help.
Uh-oh, now I'm going to forget that. I think I'm struggling here. You know, I'm getting the awareness and the acceptance thing and the accepting it with kindness and compassion. But I guess I'm not seeing how that's in and of itself enough to get you to the next, to the other realm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Regardless of what it is.
I think it's because the premise is that they're prisons. These are not states that we want to be in. We're not doing the whole path here. This is not the entire path. This is like the beginning of the path of liberating oneself by recognizing and acknowledging the realm you're in. But it's not like you're saying, I'm an angry person and that's fine. I'm just going to be angry. You're coming from the point of view that is something you want to free yourself from.
Okay. I got that.
I think that's it. Okay. Okay, great. Okay, anybody else before? We got like 2 minutes left. Lama Jinzong.
Can you, I wonder if this will speak to this. On the second page of Pema Chodron's explanation, mm-hmm. where it says the transformation, that in the context here, to speak to Chet's thing, what's the action or what happens? It seems to say that Fourth line, with awareness, you can still feel the feelings, but you begin to develop a sense of perspective. You can also begin to use these feelings to arouse compassion for others. And then if you skip down, it says, with compassion, third line from the bottom of that paragraph, compassion can be spontaneously ignited by that awareness, and this can allow us to help each other from a place of equality, not of superiority. So it seems to me that at least now, like you say, it isn't just that you're developing compassion for yourself when you're saying, mm-hmm. okay, I'm allowed to feel it, but it's also you're saying, oh, wait, this is how other people feel, and it's a way of beginning to learn how to empathize with others, and that will help you. So you're not just seeing that I'm critical, but now I can feel that others are critical and, you know, developing compassion for, mm-hmm. I think that was a big point too, where she says, you come to help each other from a place of equality, not of superiority. I don't know if that speaks to it, but I'm sort of seeing that as meaningful.
Yeah, thank you. I think we're going to have to stop now. We're going to do the dedication, but first I just wanted to say that this is the class where I wanted to introduce these teachings. Ornament of Precious Liberation and Path of Buddhahood could seem more like just academic study. I just want to emphasize that it's all about practice, and that this is a branch of practice that we could work with actively as we're going through Gampopa, because we don't get to actual active practice parts for a while. I mean, we do in a way, like contemplation of impermanence and so forth, but I just suggest that this is a way that we could all keep working. This is a way that we could work with our meditation. You know, I hope everybody has an active daily meditation practice, because it's really indispensable to traveling the path to developing wisdom and compassion, is to actually study, contemplate, and meditate. So this is something we can use in our meditation. We can use it on the spot. I just found it very practical. And we're going into something a little more academic. So I'd like to keep this alive. And so please feel free to keep bringing your experiences and your questions about these teachings on the six realms. We didn't talk about them in detail, but I really appreciated everybody sharing their experiences and their insights into it. So next week, we're going to talk about Gampopa. We're going to talk about Gampopa's life, and how he fits into the Kagyu lineage, and also a little bit about why we care about lineage. Like, why is lineage important? You know, it tends to happen to be very important to us, you know, as practitioners within a lineage. But why is that? So please read something about Gampopa before our class next week. It can be this lovely book, The Life of Gampopa, which is really only about 100 pages, because there's extra material at the back, the history of the Kagyu lineage. But if that's more than you want to take on, just whatever you find. If you have any of the editions of Ornament of Precious Liberation or Jewel Ornament of Liberation, there will be biographical information about Gampopa. So please study that. You know, internalize something, like know something about Gampopa's life, who he was. Because as Sita Rinpoche said when he was teaching Ornament of Precious Liberation, if you don't appreciate, if you don't understand what an extraordinary person Gampopa was, then you won't be able to appreciate how extraordinary his teachings are, and they are extraordinary. So next week we're going to talk about Gampopa, and then the following week we will get into the text itself. This is the edition that I'm using, the Ornament of Precious Liberation by Ken Holmes. It's his translation, his updated translation that came out last year. But you can have any of them. This is the other one that you're most likely to have, which is Ornament of Liberation, translation by Kenpo Kunchuk. Also excellent. And as Richard and I were discussing, he was reminding me what excellent supplementary materials it has. In the back, it has a lot of wonderful appendices with a lot of information, extra information about things that are discussed or referred to in the book. So whatever version of Jewel Ornament or Ornament of Precious Liberation you have is fine, and we will mostly be working directly with Path to Buddhahood. So it's good to have both books. Anybody have any questions about the class that need to be answered before next week? No. Then we will do our prayers. Let's do our dedication of merit. This merit may it win omniscience, defeat my faults the enemy, then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate, the blessings of the Buddhakayas, the blessings of changeless dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast sangha, this dedication please fulfill. And let's just take a moment to check in with how we feel in this moment, how our body feels, how we feel emotionally. Just sit with that, with complete acceptance and a sense of our feet on the ground and space around us. So I imagine we could all have very many adventures in applying these teachings before we meet again next week. anybody have anything? Well, I'm just going to unmute everybody and we can say goodbye. Okay, you're all unmuted.
Good to see it. Good to see everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, good to see all of you. Nice to see you, Bob.
Have a great week.
Bye, bye. Thanks, Lamas.
All right, I'm going to.
Thank you.
Superpower.
Have a great week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.